is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Hey, stay sharp.
Rolling into another weekend, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We are knee-deep in Notre Dame football right now. Practice number 6 of fall camp yesterday for the Fighting Irish over at Notre Dame. And as John Hoffman was just telling you about, the Colts and Bears played their preseason openers last night. Both of them won, including the Colts right here on WSBT. We'll touch on that in a little bit. But, Evan, we have so much Notre Dame football to get to first here today. How are we doing today?
Man, we are so close to this season starting. I can't wait for this Michigan-Notre Dame game.
22 days.
22. That's all I got to wait? All right, I can do it.
3 weeks and a day. And, of course, we're, as far as high school football, we're just a week away. A week from tonight, we'll have Mishawaka at Portage. And we'll have that for you here on 96.1 WSBT as the new era begins. Keith Kinder, the head coach, the new head coach, first-year head coach, first-time head coach as far as football goes of the Mishawaka Cavemen. So we'll have that 1 week from tonight here on the Sports Leader. So let's get back to some football.
We got a lot of high school scrimmages tonight, I believe.
There are.
Things off a week. Yeah.
Yep, all the jamborees and scrimmages and all that good stuff. Mishawaka is kind of in your neck of the woods. They're going to be over at Concord tonight, scrimmaging.
That's right.
The Minutemen, so that'll be going on over there. Hopefully the weather is good. This has been kind of a crazy week. I was driving home last night after Sports Beat, and I mean, it was coming down hard. I don't know what it was like over where you live, but the visibility was pretty bad on the way home last night, just rolling down Douglas Road.
We're supposed to get a little more of that. I'm not sure the timing. I saw later in the evening, so it could be a rain-soaked scrimmage for some high school teams tonight.
Very well could be. I don't know about you, but I mean, that was always that was fun. It didn't bother me playing football in the rain. Baseball is another story, but playing football in the rain, I mean, those are the games that you remember. It's all sloppy and you're mudding around and jumping around and all that kind of good
Sean,
stuff.
Sean, I don't know what you're talking about. I played quarterback.
That's right.
I mean, maybe like a backyard football game, like, you know, give me the snow, give me the rain. But if we're playing on a Friday night, man, it's got to be like 65 to 67 degrees, you know, just a slight breeze.
Those underinflated football, right?
I like to be able to grip the football a little bit. I definitely did not overpump the footballs when we played. Yeah. I can tell you that much.
I forgot who I was talking to. Quarterbacks are always going to want the perfect weather. You're not going to want the mud at all. But, yeah, I did not play quarterback. I was jumping around in the mud and having fun. So, of course, the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley is presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class. 574-226-8234. Visit SharpleyTraining.com. It sounds like you've got some guys over there who are itching to get us out and do a little grilling at Sharpley Training, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We've got a couple of guys. We've got Tony Cook from Legacy Heating and Air and Matt LeBaron from Lipper Components. They're trying to start a little, I think, Sean and Sharpley Leprechaun Lunch fan club on Fridays. perhaps pulling the grill out, doing some brats, maybe some hot dogs and burgers, and who knows what else. But, yeah, they're rocking and rolling next door right now. We call it the Physique Friday. We can do some biceps and some triceps to make sure that once football season comes around, when they head out to the tailgates, you know, their biceps are looking pretty good.
Yeah, that's right. I saw Tony earlier this week at Mike Bray's Coaches versus Cancer event. He doesn't look like he has to worry too much about the biceps.
No, he doesn't miss too many of those upper body days.
Doesn't look like it. All right, so we might have to look into that in the very near future. Well, let's talk about, we've got a lot of different Notre Dame related stuff we're going to talk about in today's show. Yesterday was the second practice the media got to see, and it was the first one at Notre Dame, and it was also the first one we got to see the team in full pads after it was just a week ago today. I was down in Culver, and we're actually going to get to see another practice tomorrow, so we've got a lot going on right now. But so full practice, not full practice, full pads yesterday, practice on campus, and got to get out there and watch it. And it was, I'll kind of go through some of my notes here, Evan, and I'll kind of bounce some things off you and get your thoughts. We've talked about Brandon Wimbush quite a bit, both during last season and during this off season, on things that he needs to work on. So it was kind of an up and down day for both Wimbush and the receivers yesterday. For Wimbush, more so, I thought he definitely got better as practice went along. He was kind of up and down early. It was more in the warm-up periods, but really pretty good when it came, or a lot better anyway, when it came to the live stuff. And so I'll start with the warm-ups. I mean, there were some balls that sailed on him and things like that, but they're warm-ups for a reason. Right, you know, like most people don't have the media sitting there watching their warm-ups and taking notes of their warm-ups. The warm-ups for a reason, right, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to get me started on we're talking about warm-ups here,
right,
Sean, and most college teams really, you know, which may come as a surprise. There isn't usually, say, a built-in you know, throwing program. A warm-up where, you know, they're getting out there and they're going through, we're making X number of throws, we're doing this drill, maybe we're using some resistance bands. Usually, if you're, you know, if you're a quarterback that wants to get some extra work, you're going to have to go out there a little bit early to get warm and get loose. So a lot of times when the media sees the move the field period, which is just kind of the first, all right, we're going to go through X number of plays, it's more about getting the blood flow going. I got to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of it as a player. I wouldn't be as a coach either. I think that there could be, you know, the time could be well spent doing some of the throwing programs or warming up in a different way. But it does, again, it does kind of, you know, it gets you in and out of the huddle. If you're going no huddle, it gets you moving down the field.
Yeah.
But usually when I'm watching that,
stuff,
I don't,
right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I don't take too much stock into that period as far as how the day is going to go, whether a quarterback looks locked in or not. You know, once he gets loose, once he gets warm and you see him go through, you know, maybe a period where he's throwing to the receivers, a one-on-one period, even a seven-on-seven, and then ultimately in a team period, that's going to carry a lot more weight for me than the tempo period at the beginning.
Okay. And yeah, you know, I mean, I think we're all along the same lines. I mean, it's when stuff is live is obviously the more important stuff. If you take the practice on the whole, every pass Wimbush threw, I had him 26 of 49, which is 53%. And again, that includes the early stuff, warm up stuff, where it's you know, just a one on one type situation, not necessarily, not even close to being live. So 53% is still, you know, again, when you include all that early stuff, not a bad number. Both Wimbush and Ian Book were working on their progressions more yesterday, and there was actually one period that was devoted strictly to the progressions, where it was a quarterback and a group of receivers, 3-4, sometimes 5, I think, even, where they all just go out and run different routes, and then the quarterback, you see him, he drops back, he's moving his eyes, going through the progressions, looking one receiver to the next, kind of starting high, moving down low, and he would never actually throw the ball. It was just the process of seeing each guy going through the progressions, the routes by the different guy throughout the play, and he would kind of, like, right at the end, sort of with the ball still kind of cocked up by his shoulder, kind of, you know, do a shoulder feign kind of thing where, like, you know, that's where I'm going to throw or whatever. But I thought it was important, because Evan, because there were times when Wimbush was probably taking off running too many times last year where he didn't see, where he didn't go through all the progressions. He'd see a little pressure and maybe take off running too soon.
Yeah, what I would say, you know, what's beneficial about doing, you know, drills like that when you're going through progression, whether it's, and there's a couple of different ways progression works. There's pure clear-cut read progressions, and then there's also progressions where it's, you know, it's based on, say, a coverage. So, you know, the first portion of that, you might have a play where it's written in your playbook, you're reading 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that could be, you know, you're going from one receiver to the tight end, to the next receiver, to the next receiver, and then your check down is your running back. Well, there's also reads that are going to be based on coverage. So if they're in, say, you know, if they're in cover 2 versus if they're in cover 3 or man, your read then is going to be, it could just be on one side of the field. A lot of times the disconnect for quarterbacks is they get very ingrained in, I'm sitting here in my meeting room, my quarterback meeting room with quarterback coach Tommy Reese. We're watching film. We're writing things on the board. And then it's a completely different feel or completely different picture once we get out onto the practice field or into the game. So, you know, being able to take what they're seeing in a meeting setting, what they're seeing on the field, what they're seeing in install when they're putting in the new offense or new plays or whatever those progressions are, and then going out and actually working on it on the field, even in a controlled setting like that, is going to help pay some dividends once they get into the team settings and then once they get into the games on Saturdays as well.
Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader with former Notre Dame quarterback Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers as we go through this hour with you after a Notre Dame practice number 6 for the Irish this fall yesterday, and another practice coming up tomorrow that the media is going to get to see now. So I talked about Wimbush's overall completion number over the course of practice, 26 of 49. A lot of his incompletions, or at least a decent amount of them, came on where they were down working in the red zone on some of the back corner fades and things like that, just working on timing. So again, that's not as much, well, there's at least some significance. There's a defensive back there. Again, there's not any pressure on him or anything like that. But those plays are, again, more about timing, just getting timing down. And it's still really early in camp when you've got 3 weeks to go until the season starts. So there was a lot of that. And I don't know about you, Evan. I've never been a fan of the fade pass. I realize there's probably times where it serves a purpose, but I'm just not a fan of making the back boundary, giving you two extra defenders, basically, and all the timing has to be perfect from the throw to the leap and the whole thing by the receiver.
Yeah, I mean, if you get a good matchup, you know, you'll see quarterbacks taking a shot, and when you have a good quarterback who, you know, understands leverage of the defensive back, a back shoulder throw is going to be, you know, a lot of times a win.
Mm-hmm.
I still really like, you know, my favorite red zone plays were scheme-based plays. You know, a play that we use quite often, well, we had two different ones that I really thought were winners for us. You know, when I played, we had a lot of pop pass plays, so a hard play action, you know, an isolated receiver, usually over the middle of the field. And early on in my career, you know, that guy that got most of the attention was Jeff Samardzija, and he was able to high point a lot of passes over the middle of the field. But you'd usually then have a receiver who was on the back end running maybe a more complex route. But probably my favorite concept in the red zone that's not maybe an ISO route is, you know, you're seeing a lot of what we would call bracket coverage or cover 7 in the red zone, where you have a defensive back or linebacker bracketing. So one guy on the inside, one guy on the outside of each potential pass catcher. And in order to take advantage of that, you got a high low. So what we would do is we called this play razor. We would have a slot receiver who would kind of settle and then run an out pattern right at the goal line. So if he was open, you're hitting that guy right away.
Mm-hmm.
And the backside of that was maybe a guy who was lined up at the numbers. You know, a similar guy. I mean, it could be be Chase Claypool in this offense. It could be a guy like Miles Boykin, too, someone with some height and athleticism. And he would then run a backside in cut, usually about a yard or two in from the back part of the end zone. So as the quarterback, you're either fitting a ball really tight right at the goal line for a touchdown to the slot receiver, if the defenders are playing at the line there, at the goal line, or you're high-pointing a ball to someone who's really athletic at the back end. So I get where you're coming from as far as sometimes, you know, it almost seems like an easy out. I'm just going to throw this ball up. And
yeah,
most quarterbacks that approach it that way don't have a lot of success. Like, you have to look. You have to understand, what is the leverage of this play? You know, if I am going to throw a fade ball, is it going to be a back shoulder? Is it going to be firm? Is there going to be a little more touch versus kind of being an autopilot and just throwing it up there? But there is something to being said and putting in a package of how can we X and O this team in the red zone to make sure we get a pretty good look for our quarterback.
And I think it's interesting you mentioned the bracket coverage, and there was one where Wimbush hit Miles Boykin in between bracket coverage yesterday that was right on the money. There were a lot of balls that were right where they needed to be. Like I said, he definitely got better as the practice went on. And I mentioned his overall 26 of 49 over the entirety of the practice. And Brian Kelly said after practice that they were bringing guns a-blazing pressure on Wimbush yesterday in the live sessions. Important to put him in and make him uncomfortable in practice to see what he could do. He was 15 for 23 in the actual live sessions, where it was either 11 on 11 and some 7 on 7 with DBs, you know, locked in and going hard. So 15 for 23 in those settings where it was live stuff, 65%. I mean, I think we'd all sign up for
65%. I like those numbers. Yeah. I like those numbers a lot better than the overall day percentage. I like those better. And really, I mean, if you are taking stock and grading out a quarterback, I mean, those are, you know, you can include the 7-on-7, but even if you throw those out, you know, I mean, you want to see a guy have a high completion percentage once they get into the 11-on-11, mm-hmm. once they get into those types of team settings, because that's really what it's all about. You know, Sean, I probably could still show up to a practice right now and in a 7-on-7 setting, probably still complete a pretty high percentage of my passes, but I don't know if I would be there right now if I had guys coming at me and trying to tackle me. So, you know, that's the true testament. And obviously, once we get to the season here in 3 weeks, you know, is the offensive line going to be able to protect? That's a question. And then how is Brandon Wimbush going to respond once he gets into those situations where he is a little more uncomfortable than he had planned on? I mean, we look back to Georgia last year, and I've said this a couple of times, and even on this show too, is, you know, the way Georgia played early on in that season, I think, really set a mental tone for Brandon Wimbush that carried on throughout the entire season. I think he thought his time clock for protection was a lot shorter than what he ended up having for the majority of the year because of Georgia. I mean, they were really fast laterally. Yeah. They were really fast linear, you know, that linear speed up the field.
No
so,
doubt.
You know, I'll be interested to see. And Michigan's going to be a really good test. They have a great front four. They have some talented players within their front seven. You know, are these new faces at the offensive line going to be able to protect Brandon Wimbush? Is he going to be able to, you know, have some comfortability in the pocket? Because when he's on time, Sean, when he's in rhythm, he's a very, very accurate quarterback. And you could say that about a number of quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
What quarterback would you pull? And the quarterback's like, yes, I love when I'm getting hit throwing the football. There aren't going to be too many guys that say that.
That's true.
You know, they want the clean pocket. But the guys that are able to become the elite quarterbacks, which Brandon Wimbush has those skills, it's going to be the guys that can make the plays with people in their face, the guys that can make the off-balance throws.
Yeah, I think, and you mentioned off-balance throws, I think one of the more encouraging things. Now, two different things on that. So let me get to the bad first. We'll go through the bad first. Is you talk about off balance. There was a play. He did have a couple of different interceptions first. There was also a near interception by Drew Tranquil that would have easily been a pick six. It was back inside. It was at least inside the 30-yard line. So Wimbush gets some heavy pressure on a screen pass, and he kind of starts to take off to the right, and then he throws back to the left across his body, and there's Drew Tranquil sitting there, and the ball just bounced off Drew's hands. Otherwise, it would have been a pick six, and that's one that you can't have, obviously. But the two interceptions that I look at, Sean Crawford picked him off on about a 20-yard post. It was that play was more on Chase Claypool because he just stopped running his route. There was a little bit of contact with Crawford, and Claypool just stops running his route. Then there was another one, an interception by Nick Coleman on a drag route over on the left side of the field. It was intended for Chris Fink, and it was a little more on Fink because instead of staying sharp and kind of on that 90-degree line toward the sideline, he drifted a yard or two deep, and it let Coleman kind of undercut him a little bit, and it ended up being an easy interception there for Nick Coleman. And there was also not an interception, but a really nice deep ball to Miles Boykin on a go route that Wimbush dropped over Boykin's shoulder. It just went right through his hands. And I thought, to their credit, afterwards, both Boykin and Claypool, they both got to speak to the media yesterday after practice, and they both said they had to do better. They knew they had to do better. And Chip Long kind of got on Boykin once in the middle of practice, got his attention, and he was definitely more focused after that.
So Chip's kind of pulling the Aaron Rodgers from the other day about his receivers not showing up.
Yeah, maybe not airing him out like that, but you could hear Chip Long bark a couple times. That's for sure. The other thing, though, that I thought was encouraging when we talk about the live settings for was his mechanics, the stuff that we've talked about, the stuff he's worked on all offseason, the stuff you and I have talked about here on this show quite a bit. They do not break down when Wimbush is under duress. And I mean, again, we've talked a lot about this with correcting mechanics. So that's got to be a really good sign right now early in camp. Even if he's not perfect all the time, it's practice and he's working on things. But the fact that his mechanics remain solid even when he's under pressure, because that's when that instinct kicks in, and it seems like he's got some new muscle memory instinct to kind of go along with it right now.
And that was an important factor. And we talked a lot about that. You know, was what happened in the spring going to be repeatable? And that's got to be, you know, you've got to build that into your weekly and daily progression. And hopefully then, you know, what takes over is what you've worked on the entire offseason from the summer and then into the fall, too. But I'd be interested, too, Sean, to get your take. You know, we've talked a lot about Brandon Wimbush and, you know, my experience as a quarterback. A couple of starts under my belt, but quite a few games where I went into the game as a backup. And I looked at myself as, you know, my development, too, as the most important person on the field. What's been right now kind of the general consensus with Ian Book, you know, with Brandon getting a lot of love, and obviously this being his job, and it should be his job with the stats that he put up last year. You know, in a pinch or in a certain situation, what's the confidence level? What's it looking like for QB2 right now?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's right there as well. He did some good things. I think the thing that stands out the most to him about him, a couple of different things. One, on some plays that are designed for the quarterback to run, he can run. He can kind of catch a defense off guard every now and then, and he had a couple of those yesterday. And two, I mean, he's been pretty consistent with his balls. I mean, the thing is, and we've talked about it, there's just a different level of athleticism and overall play between he and Wimbush. But I would say, you know, the maybe knock is too hard, but to me the difference, in the past I've seen a pretty different level of arm strength between those two, and mm-hmm. and Wimbush still has the stronger arm, but I do feel like there's more on Ian Book's throws right now when he comes it out, when he's throwing it hard, putting it on a line. I do think you see some improvement there.
Would you say that Ian has sneaky athleticism like Pat Connaughton, maybe?
Was Pat Connaughton really sneaky athleticism, though?
Going into the NBA Combine when Connaughton right. showed up, there were a couple of different writers.
Uh-oh. It looks like we lost Evan. He's connected over at Sharply Training today, so we will try to get Evan here in just a minute. We were getting ready to take a timeout anyway, so we'll do that and come back, and we'll have Evan back with us once again. Sean and Sharply and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, presented by Sharply Training. With us, you can be a champion. You can search for them on Facebook to find out all about their different training. Also brought to you by Ivy Court Inn and Suites with competitive corporate rates. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Together we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By Lechleitner Door. Need a new garage door or repair on your current one? Call Lechleitner 295-6311. By Zollman's Tire and Auto Care. Voted the best tire store 2 years in a row. By the Trattoria at McCree's. This unique pasta bar offers made-from-scratch pastas from old-world Italian recipes. By Kurt Outdoor Living, make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Kurt Outdoor Living. And by Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, contact Joel Ladig in Mishawaka. 26 minutes after 12 o'clock, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Notre Dame football talk. We've got that plus some Colts and Bears coming up. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharply, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharply and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Glad to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. We are 22 days away from Notre Dame and Michigan, and we'll have it for you right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, from pregame all the way through kickoff. And we also found out we're going to be carrying ESPN's College Game Day show during the season before your show this year, Evan. So we're going to have a taste of that. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. 3 weeks from tomorrow. We're getting closer. But at the same time, I had to kind of do a double take. I was like, man, it's really got 3 weeks to go. So it's close, but just far enough. Just far enough for some excitement and enticement.
Thank God for high school football to start next week.
That's right. We got a couple weeks of that first. And again, we've got it coming up 1 week from tonight when the Mishawaka Cavemen open up the brand new season and the new coaching era of Keith Kinder when they travel to Portage. And I've been looking at them, got over and saw them a little bit at practice earlier this week. And they're looking good, of course, as a coaching staff. They're breaking down everything and more critical of everything. But I saw some good things over there. And they've got a lot back on the offensive side of the ball. And they're going to have that same option offense and a quarterback and the fullback. So they've got their two returning rushers from last year in Shively and Harness, so it's going to be another fun season of Mishawaka Cavemen football here on WSBT. All right, go ahead, Evan.
I'm loving this high school football season. You know, we got a lot of kids obviously here that train through our program. So
right.
it's such a fun time of year. You know, I love college football too, but there's just something special about playing under the lights on Friday. And you know, there's so many great programs around here. A lot of interesting storylines. You know, some guys graduating from last year, some coaching changes. So, you know, it's time. You know, there's a lot of schools that are starting here. They start classes coming up this next week, and that kind of gets things rolling and kicked off. But it should be another great you know, year for high school football here in the Michiana area.
Now, we'll shift back to some Notre Dame football, and a few different things that I wanted to get to. I'm going to start with this one. Sports Illustrated had a thing that I saw they published this week. They asked opposing coaches to anonymously break down teams in the preseason top 25 rankings. And a couple different things here that were said about Notre Dame. And again, these come from opposing coaches. So there's two parts to this. I'll read the first part first. So it says, Brandon Wimbush is one of the best running quarterbacks in the country. It all starts with him. Defenses are going to have trouble containing him. They've got the big receiver, 6'4", junior Chase Claypool, who's a mismatch when he gets in the red zone. Overall, there's more consistency on the offense. The line was outstanding this year. The guys they've got coming in are really good, too. I'm impressed with their receivers. Defending them comes down to limiting the big play, tackling in the open field, not allowing for big plays. Those are things to focus on. So you okay with everything that you hear there so far? Anything you strongly agree or disagree with?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that opposing coaches, you know, singling out a guy like Chase Claypool, who really, you know, hasn't had a lot of experience, hasn't really proven himself yet. You know, I agree with, he has the potential to be a mismatch in the red zone. You know, the tough part for me, I think, at this point is to say, you know, is there really going to be more consistency on the offense? I don't know. I mean, you're losing two guys that were drafted in the first 10 picks of the NFL draft. Like, those are big holes to fill. I mean, and they did hit it on the head saying, you know, the guys that they have coming in on the offensive line are really good. But if you look at right now, filling those holes, developing some consistency there, and then you know, what's going to happen at running back? There are still some question marks, but I think top to bottom, there's some good versatility. I think they have the potential to be a very good offense. It's just going to be, and I've been saying this for a long time now, is who's going to step up that we're kind of expecting to step up. So, you know, a guy like Chase Claypool, a guy like Tony Jones Jr., you know, a guy like, well, even Brandon Wimbush, you could throw his name in there too. You know, is his consistency as far as a passing quarterback, is that next step going to be taken? So I don't disagree with anything. You know, I think a couple of those are, for me, it's almost still like I want to wait and see a little bit. To make sure. I'm not saying that they're wrong. I think that all of those things certainly could come into play this year.
No, that's valid. I think especially with the running game that we are still kind of waiting to see how it shakes out. Now, at the same time, we spent the first segment of this show a lot of time talking about Brandon Wimbush's day yesterday, and deservedly so, because that is one of the bigger overall questions that they have. The quarterback is always probably the biggest question for any team. But Tony Jones Jr. did have a good day yesterday. Looked pretty good. There were some nice runs that he made, and he's trimmed down about 12, 15 pounds from last year when he suffered that injury against Boston College. He wasn't able to stay in as good a shape as he'd like to because it was the ankle injury, so he put on some weight. He's taken it off, and he looks even trimmer since he switched from 34 to number 6. I think that still kind of fools me even that now and then. But, yeah, so, I mean, he's looking good so far, but there's still a lot of other things that come with that because it can't be just Tony Jones Jr., especially if there's no Dexter Williams for the first four games. Like, one of the bigger questions is going to be, what's Jafar Armstrong going to look like as a blocker? For one, can he block consistently? We know that was one of the chief reasons that Dexter Williams wasn't able to see the field more last year.
Still a big question for me. I mean, what's Autry Denson going to do? What's the staff? What type of package are they going to put together as far as utilizing these guys in a couple of different unique ways to make sure that the running game, you know, fortunately they have a very athletic quarterback in Brandon Wimbush, who's going to be, you know, he's going to be a fixture in that running attack, much like he was last year. You know, he's a danger to, but certainly you'd like to have a little more depth at the running back position. I like Tony Jones a lot. I think he can do a lot. I think he's got great versatility, can block, he can catch passes out of the backfield. You know, you could go some empty sets where he's motioning out and maybe lined up on a linebacker. So there's a lot you can do. But I'm with you. I'm still interested to see how they're going to use I guess kind of best describe these hybrid guys who are maybe not, you know, a pure running back, but maybe also not, you know, a guy who's only a slot receiver, guys who can be used in jet sweeps and other aspects like that.
Right. So now, again, I'm going to come back to the receivers specifically here in a little bit in our next segment, but I wanted to kind of finish the thoughts from this coach or coaches or whoever. This is kind of a compilation. Again, Sports Illustrated, they asked opposing coaches this week to anonymously break down the preseason top 25 teams, and so they got input from coaches regarding Notre Dame, and so that was kind of the offensive side of things. Now, here's what was said about the defensive side. Safety Nick Coleman anchors the defense, and the unit as a whole can take a big step forward this year. Clark Lee, the defensive coordinator who was promoted from linebackers coach, is a great defensive mind. He'll do a fine job. I think anytime you can have continuity, it helps the players. They don't have to learn a new language. So let's start with that. I was very interested to see that someone thinks Nick Coleman anchors the defense. What do you think about that?
Yeah. You know, I think probably you would look at least I would, I'd look at the linebacker position, and having spent some time, you know, listening to Clark and kind of talking through how the defense moves and the different pieces, I think that there's a lot of, you know, maybe not as much making sure guys are lined up, but certainly from a communicative standpoint, the linebacker position, there's a lot there. So, you know, looking at a guy like Tavon Coney or, you know, Drew Tranquil, I think I'd probably start there, really.
Exactly.
That's no offense to a guy like Nick Coleman or Sean Crawford or Julian Love, but I think it kind of starts and stops on, you know, these guys who are responsible for a lot of the gap fills. If you look at how this defense has played out over the course of time spent at Bowling Green and Wake Forest, it's the linebacker position, and then I think safety is secondary to that. Safety is still very, very, very important, but these linebackers, I mean, I don't know if I want to use the word pressure, but there's a lot of responsibility for these linebackers to make sure that they're filling and being in the right gap and making these tackles.
Completely agree. I there's no question when it comes to the defense that it's the linebackers, Tavon Coney, Drew Tranquil, who are the anchors. And I mean, you can throw Jerry Tillery in there up at the front as well. It's not a knock on Nick Coleman, but I mean, Nick was kind of coming out of the spring. He was really kind of a forgotten guy, I think. Now, we say all this, but Nick Coleman actually had a good practice yesterday. I mean, he had that interception that, yeah, I talked about, and he was out there running with the first team yesterday. So, I mean, he's improved, but he's just not. Nick Coleman is not like the guy who's out front on this defense. He's a good defender, and, I mean, it's looking like he's going to be a key contributor this year. But it is a head-scratcher that you say he's the anchor of the defense.
Yeah, he still needs to be a guy, and he'll be an important part of the defense. But, you know, my eyes, when I'm watching, you know, game one against Michigan, I think we'll probably start at the line of scrimmage. You know, talking about that front four that you mentioned, are they doing their jobs like Coney and Tranquil, and then whoever else will be in the mix at linebacker? Are they able to then free up space for those guys to make plays?
And we should talk a little bit about the front from yesterday as well, because something that Brian Kelly mentioned after practice specific to the defense is he feels like he has four defensive ends who can really get out there and go, two on each side. You've got Dalen Hayes and Julian Okwara, more the speed guys on one side, and then the two bigger guys on the strong side. You've got Khalid Kareem and Adia Gundeje. And so he says he's got four guys, and we're going to see all four of them this year. And so, I mean, that's good news. You talked about Tillery as well, but that was kind of the big thing, I think, that came out of yesterday, that we saw all four guys out there, and they're all guys who are going to contribute this year.
that's big to have depth at the, you know, at the edge. I think what will be, and maybe a missing piece. I feel like, you know, this is a discussion every year. Is there going to be a guy who can rush from the edge consistently? You know, you've seen pressure numbers. They went up last year. You know, is that going to be a continued trend? I think that the edge could have some help from, you know, whether it's a nickel guy coming off in certain situations or the linebacking unit creating some pressure. I mean, it's such a game changer if you can get pressure with your front four. But if you're not, you know, you've got to find some other unique ways to make sure that you're getting to the quarterback because, and this, I mean, this gets back to our conversation from earlier today, is no quarterback wants to have guys in his face. And if, as a defense, you're able to present some of that pressure with a very good defensive backfield. I think the strength of this defense, you know, if you look at it as a whole, there aren't a lot of weak areas. I think that you have a lot of good areas. I don't know if you would, if at this point, and this may change as the season progresses, you say, hey, this is an elite area. This is an elite group. But you have a lot of consistency. You have a lot of guys back. You have a lot of guys with experience. You have guys that have been in the system. And that bodes really well at the collegiate level where you have individuals who have made plays for a couple of years, who are familiar with what they're doing, really, really solid players, and a couple of guys sprinkled in there that could potentially be, you know, in an All-American mix or on one of those lists. There's some of those guys on the preseason list. So, you know, once they go out there and play, I mean, the expectations on this defense are deserved. I think they should be high. You know, now it's going to be, are you able to go out there and execute and play this defense and do it at a high level?
Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is 12:44. We'll take another time out. When we come back, I'm going to ask the former Notre Dame quarterback, Evan Sharpley, what in his mind would make for a successful Notre Dame football season? 3 weeks away, three-plus weeks, 22 days from Notre Dame, Michigan, kicking off the season right here on WSBT. And what would make for a successful season in Evan Sharpley's mind? I'm going to ask him that, plus some thoughts on a couple Notre Dame receivers, Notre Dame's two big guys, Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin. And I'll also share a special teams thought from yesterday's practice that we haven't got to touch on yet. And oh, by the way, but something that could end up being pretty important as the season goes along. So we will do all that and more when we return. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is 12:29, Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, as we get closer to 1 o'clock and three-plus weeks away from kickoff of the Notre Dame football season, Notre Dame and Michigan. You'll hear it from pregame, pre-pregame, right through postgame on Saturday, September 1st, right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. So, Evan, as that game kicks off the season, I said before the break, I was going to ask you to give us what you think would make for a successful Notre Dame season. Eric and Darren and I, we kicked this around on SportsBeat earlier this week. So, in your definition, what would a successful season look like for the Fighting Irish this year?
Sean, I'm still in that 9-10 win range. I mean, I think that should be, you know, at least where the program is right now, that's got to be a consistent number. If you look at kind of the big four, you know, I think that in order for that to happen, to get to that 9-10 win area, you've got to make sure you're winning two of those four games. You know, if you're looking at Michigan, you're looking at, you know, a team like Stanford. Also, you're looking at a team like USC. I mean, you've got to be able to win a couple of those games, and then maybe, you know, win a game that you shouldn't win. But certainly there are going to be some teams on the schedule. You look at a team like Virginia Tech on there playing at Blacksburg. That's going to be a tough place to play. It's going to be a tough win. And how this schedule finishes, too. I mean, we've talked about that a little bit and touched on it. It's not ideal. So this team is going to have to make sure that they're locked in mentally as the season progresses and then as the season ends to make sure that happens. So, you know, I think anytime you're in that 9-10 win range and, you know, most which Notre Dame fans, I don't think, want to hear that. And when you're not playing for a conference championship, that's maybe not an easy pill to swallow. But just if you're looking at a consistent program, if you're looking at a strong program, you're looking at 9 to 10 wins a year, and you're looking at playing in a really good bowl game. You know, I think that that would identify a strong program at doing that. Now, if you're talking about playing in a conference, you know, that might change a little bit. You know, are you winning a conference championship, which then could propel you to playing in, you know, in that Final Four, playing in the college football playoffs, and then playing in a national championship game. I think that at right, you know, how it stands right now, maybe even without that piece with a conference, you know, I think for me, I look at success as 9 or 10 wins, getting invited to a bowl game, and then winning a bowl game.
Well, I like a lot of the things, and I agree with pretty much everything that you've said, but my question is, so like when I look at this year's team, for example, and I look at some of the things that happened last year, like the Miami game specifically, we saw that it's one thing if you lose a close game to a really good team, like what happened with Georgia early in the season, but losing the way they did to Miami later in the season, they had no shot at getting back in the playoff, I don't think, really realistically after that. And then you go in and you lose to a Stanford team that I think that they were probably really better than as well. So it's not just, to me, it's not just the amount of the losses, but where this team is right now with everything they have back, from the quarterback to some key guys on the offensive line and some skill position guys, to what they have overall on the defense. So it's one thing to lose, but it's another thing to lose and essentially just get dominated the way it happened at Miami.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this year's schedule, I mean, there's still going to be four or five, I guess if you could call them, losable games. And you got to make sure that those don't happen. I don't know if there's an opponent that pops up on the schedule where you're looking at maybe an experience like Miami. And I don't think too many people thought that an experience like Miami was going to happen last year.
Exactly.
You know, going up into the game. But, you know, you look at a team like Michigan, you know, that's, I think, it's going to set the tone for the year. I don't know if it'll be a, you know, exact barometer for success for either team, but certainly having them game one, both programs, is pretty intriguing for me, to then kind of see how things go. But, you know, following that Michigan game, you know, really, if you're looking at Ball State, Vanderbilt, and Wake Forest, you know, those are games where we're leading up to Stanford. On the 29th, you know, you should be either looking at being 4-0 playing a Stanford team, which should be pretty special, but, you know, also potentially being 3-1 with another opportunity on a national stage to play a top program who over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years has been extremely consistent. You know, the one for me, and I know we spoke on this several weeks ago on someone, you know, an early list saying that the Virginia Tech game was the biggest circled game for Notre Dame, which if you don't beat Michigan and you don't beat Stanford, the Virginia Tech game really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But if you're going into that game saying, you know, we're four and one or we're undefeated, yeah, that becomes a huge game, playing a Virginia Tech team that's always very dangerous, you know, with some good athletes, solid on special teams. You know, where does that go? And then you've got Pittsburgh and Navy and Northwestern. You know, you can't count out Navy. You know, they've taken their program to another level. But then you look at, you know, to finish, you've got Florida State, you've got Syracuse, and USC. And that's, you know, it's a tough way to end the season. So, you know, for me, you know, the big ones to look at are going to be Michigan, Stanford, Virginia Tech, Florida State, and USC. If you're able to get through those, I mean, it's a tough road. But that's, you know, that's why most players go and play at Notre Dame, is for that tough road. You're going to get every team's matchup, and, you know, I mean, no disrespect by not necessarily mentioning you know, Wake Forest, who's a good program, you know, Northwestern, or even Syracuse or Pittsburgh, for that matter, who's, you know, over the course of the last 10 years played Notre Dame traditionally pretty tough, too. You know, those are games you can't overlook. You got to make sure that you're focused and locked in. So, you know, it's a tough season, but, you know, the tone is going to be set very early, playing a quality opponent. I really like that they're playing Michigan game one. You know, let's see where they are, and then, you know, you can kind of take it from there. An early season loss, like you mentioned, similar to Georgia last year, is more preferable than a late season loss or blowout to, say, like a Florida State or USC.
Right. All right, we're about 4 minutes away from 1 o'clock final timeout. I'm going to get that special teams thought in when we return. Sean and Sharply, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharply and the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, winding things down as we approach 1 o'clock here this afternoon. Of course, we're presented by Sharply Training. With us, you can be a champion. Search for them on Facebook. Also by Ivy Court Inn and Suites, by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, by Kurt Outdoor Living, by Edward Jones. Contact Nathan Pivovar in Mishawaka or Craig Langhofer in New Carlisle. By Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, by the Trattoria at McCree's, and by Lechleitner Door. They open all the right doors. A little bit less than a minute, Evan. I was promising that special teams thought Justin Yoon, the field goal place kicker, was booming some field goals yesterday. Ian Book, by the way, the new holder in for Montgomery Van Gorder. But there was one that Yoon hit from 41 yards. He split the uprights. The ball was really just jumping off his foot yesterday. That one probably would have been good from 50-plus. And then the one that he missed, he banged the upright about another 5 yards back. So that's a good sign for the kicker here. We've got about 15 seconds to go.
Yeah, anytime you have a weapon like that, you know, it helps the offense out. You know, you get into the red zone or close to it, you can put some points on the board. Obviously, the goal is touchdowns, but, you know, Yoon could end up as one of the all-time points leaders once he leaves Notre Dame. You know, have an opportunity as young as a freshman, and if he's consistent here these last 2 years, I think he'd be able to do it.
Talk to you next week, Evan. WSBT South Bend.